This episode of Victims and Villains is brought to you by our Horrific Hope Film Festival sponsors for 2023, Diabolical DVD, Convictant Printing, and Fierce Literature, all of which you guys can find links for in the descriptions below. And if you are a filmmaker, please consider submitting your film and your nightmares to our screenplay competition and official lineup for 2023. At the end of this episode, you guys are going to get to hear the brand new single from Sophia Talvik entitled Snowman, and just a word of warning that this episode did experience some connection issues when recording it, so the audio right around the 45-minute and 68-minute mark does have some breaking up. I did try to edit as best as possible, but nonetheless, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Victims and Villains. Hey, you're listening to Victims and Villains, and this is part one of our Collateral Christmas crossover with our friends over at Collateral Cinema. My name is Captain Nostalgia, and welcome to the show that discusses mental health through pop culture. And joining me from our friends over at Collateral Cinema, please go check them out, is Mr. Bo Maddox and Ashley Chancellor.
Woo! What's going on, everybody?
Hey, it is so awesome to be here. Thanks for having us on, Josh. I love doing this with you every Christmas.
Yeah, it's becoming a nice little tradition for us. You know, it's like we look forward to it every year. I mean, I'm pretty sure that we get all this set up like pretty much in the middle of the year, right?
It feels weird because you guys are like so like prepared on like what movies you guys are going to want to do, because you guys do all your seasonally. I'm just like waiting for like, all right, what's the Christmas movie that we're going to be covering this year?
Oh man. Yeah. This year we're going to do Saving Christmas, Kirk Cameron's movie. So yeah.
But yeah. I need to like next year, like find like a Hanukkah slasher. Like they have to be one out there.
Oh, there has to be. Yeah.
I am down for that. That sounds awesome.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. Because I don't know. I seem to like be like developing a theme with this one, because we're covering Violent Night. This is our spoiler filled episode. If you guys want the spoiler free version, go check out YouTube, youtube.com/victimsandvillains. But this and then Fat Man have a lot in common. So, yes. You know, I feel like we're just kind of like developing a trend, and I'm like, I feel like Die Hard's like the next like logical thing to do.
Oh, that's what's great about the whole Die Hard scenario, is that you can totally take that story framework or whatever, and then you can pretty much use it for anything. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that there hasn't been a more Christmas themed take on Die Hard. Not I mean, of course Die Hard is a Christmas movie, but
yeah, I was gonna say, like, when I was watching this, I was like, hey man, it's like a Christmas Die Hard. I'm like, wait a second,
Die Hard
it's a Christmas movie.
Die Hard is a Christmas Die Hard.
I was like, it's like a Christmas Home Alone. Oh no, that's Christmas movie too.
That's a Christmas movie as well.
So what is it with these movies and being Christmas movies and this like recurring,
I don't know,
like, there's parallels here,
lots of it. I mean, it's pretty much just the whole setup pretty much verbatim.
Yeah,
we even get the whole opening the vault thing as well. I mean, yes. By way of computer, it's like it's pretty much a complete send up of Die Hard.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I think Die Hard was my first Christmas episode.
That was with
Collateral Cinema.
That was.
Yeah, that was the first Christmas episode I was a part of. That may have been our first one ever, right?
I think it was, because we our first season was kind of off kilter a little bit.
Yeah.
Scheduling.
So yeah, I think Die Hard was our first Christmas movie.
Well, at least it was something like, you know, classic and like, you know, like a Christmas staple. And yeah, I've been seeing a lot of people call this one Die Hard meets Home Alone, and I love how with Trudy's character, like seeing Home Alone for the first time, like that is like actually like woven into this to kind of give like the kids that grew up on Home Alone like a, this is what it would be like if there was like blood and guts added into this. It's not just, you know, Kevin Malone went up to grow up to be Jigsaw.
That is exactly my sentiment, and that's exactly what I was thinking when the Trudy Home Alone scenes came up with her booby traps. It's like, this is exactly what we've been asking for, pretty much. You
Yes,
know,
it was
it's like,
awesome.
why can't we get something a little more straightforward where it's like a really straightforward send up of Home Alone? You know, I mean, technically, Home Alone was almost a Die Hard send up, kind of,
Yeah.
in a way. So, you know. And I don't know about the whole theories about Kevin McAllister being Jigsaw. I mean, it's a fun theory, I guess, but I mean, I haven't really dived into it that deep, so I don't know.
Oh, I mean, think about it. Like, you have like that. There's that theory, and then there is the John Wick is the alternate timeline if his character Ted got sent to military school, that's what he would have become. But
So he was Ted the whole time, huh?
yeah, he was Ted the whole time.
Wow.
The part four is just it's just a reveal that it's Ted the entire time. So this film, yeah, so this film is a wild and crazy time. This film was a lot of fun. If you guys haven't seen Violent Night, yeah, it's just a really fun time. I think the entire concept of just even if this wasn't like a bonkers movie like what it is, like a heist movie, I still would have thought like just the concept of David Harbour as Santa Claus would have been something that like would have absolutely just like drawn me in.
He absolutely nailed it as far as, you know, just kind of portraying how, you know, Santa could be a little beaten down, you know, year to year like he is. You know, I mean, he's been doing it for like hundreds of years. He's been alive for probably longer than that. You know, we even get to see some of his origins here, you know.
Yeah, and if you were to tell me, like, how could you do a better Santa Claus than Mel Gibson, and you had said David Harbour, that's enough, honestly. That's
Yeah.
enough to draw me in. That's like, okay, yeah, I want to see this. I love David Harbour. I loved him in Stranger Things, loved him in Black Widow. I think he and Florence Pugh were one of the best parts of that
Oh,
movie.
they were absolutely.
So,
Yeah.
and I honestly think he's the best part of the movie as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he's about the only portion that like I would recommend that movie. But also like even like I ended up watching his like I know it gets a lot of hate, but like I rewatched his Hellboy a couple weeks ago, and like even for as messy as that
Oh,
movie is, like David Harbour is like still a great Hellboy. Like he's a such a an Elseworld version of Ron Perlman as that character. You know, obviously Perlman made that character iconic, but like you know, David Harbour made it his own, and
if
like,
you had to have someone else.
yeah, like he's such a great choice, and like the concept of like, I love this concept too of Santa Claus being a like a really war worn, like just kind of like really spent on this, and I love his like opening monologue talking about like how just like crass kids are and how they just don't care, and like his entire character journey is basically like having to like rediscover the reason for like why he is Santa Claus in the beginning, and like the understanding of like magic of Christmas, and you know, Ash, he brought up like his origin stories, like it's like spoiler alert, but we're gonna jump into this. So if you guys haven't seen Violent Night, we're gonna start spoiling it. But he was a Viking in like the original like timeline, and
Right.
I just love the fact that like you're kind of getting to see Santa Claus go on this like mental health journey that I feel like a lot of us kind of go on sometimes this year, this time of the holidays. Like, I don't know about you guys, but like we talked about this in our Christmas Bloody Christmas episode earlier this week, where it's like holidays for me now, I feel like is a little bit more, it feels like it was like work as an adult because there's like these expectations, and like now kind of like progressing into like understanding that like it's more about like being present for family than it is like actually about like gifts and the commercialism that this this holiday like promotes. But you know, I feel like you have to kind of go through like the trenches before you like understand that, similar to like what Harbor does in this movie.
Yeah, that's kind of how I approach Christmas more or less these days. You know, like for me, it's about, you know, my niece and my nephews. I mean, I have a 13-year-old niece and two nephews. One's 5 and one's like 3. And I mean, it's really all about them for me, you know, and seeing them be happy and everything. And that's really why Trudy's character really resonated with me, you know, as an uncle. I mean, I don't have children of my own or anything, but, you know, it's just seeing that and seeing her excitement and everything, like that really like made me very happy. And it really kind of made this movie charming. Honestly,
yeah, it's interesting how this movie still maintains or retains that heartwarming Christmas feeling to it while being, you know, a violent action movie.
It is
all the creative kills. By the way, yeah, some of the kills in this movie are great. I mean, I love the star through the eye, the icicle, the what was it at the end? It was something else that was really crazy.
It was the chimney.
The chimney. Yes.
You utilize
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, the chimney, I think, was the one that got me. Like, where I was like, I wasn't expecting it, but like, I really liked like the star through the eye, like what you were talking about. Like, I wasn't expecting him to kind of just like start to burn. And I love the fact that like, for like him, like David Harbour was like, there was like a shift with that death to where David Harbour was kind of like trying to stay like really quiet. And then like, he was like, you know what? I've already awakened the beast. Let's face it head on. And like, they just kind of like, he just kind of like taunting them the entire time.
Yeah. Because, you know, you could tell early on that while he was probably a little rusty and this has been a while, he had definitely been in a fight before, but you know, well before the reveal, it was very obvious that he knew his way around it. I think he even says something like, you don't want this.
Oh, definitely. I think that the real big character turn there was when he went to treat his wound. You know, he had been stabbed in the previous fight, and you actually see his Viking tattoos and everything, and you see that he's definitely battle worn, you know, he's got some scars and whatnot. Now he's got another wound to stitch up. So
yeah. While he's like stitching the wound and everything, it was that point that it really hit home. And I was like, now this dude has been through some stuff.
Yeah. He knows how to even take care of himself. Like even if he's injured, you know, and
yeah,
you know, taking like even stitching himself up. That's no small thing right there. That's not, I mean, I think they typically give you local anesthesia for that.
Right. Yeah. And to do that to yourself, I mean, without passing out midway through.
Yeah, he had to bite down on the thing.
Do you guys think that, I mean, would you guys have guessed like that he was like a Viking before like the big reveal? Because like that was something that kind of caught me off guard, to where I was like, okay, like clearly this is like a Santa that has like seen some stuff, but like, I, like the snippets that you get of like the Viking, like I was kind of like expecting like a darker take from like the Tim Allen Santa Claus mythology, to where it's like, you know, one guy is Santa and then something happens and another guy takes over the mantle and it just kind of keeps like recycling that formula. I was kind of expecting that. So like to like know that he was like an actual like Viking through and through, I was kind of like, oh. Okay, were you guys, was that like a big twist to you guys?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I mean, my initial thought was whenever I could see that he had seen action before, and I could kind of tell was that, well, he's just been alive for a long time and he's been around the world, so he's already picked up some skills. But when they revealed the whole Viking thing, I honestly thought that was really cool, and the little bun and everything, and it all just kind of clicked.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I kind of figured that that's where they would go with him, because of the Nordic origins of and pagan origins of Santa Claus, you know, like
it's true. Yeah.
I mean, like he's basically like Odin in a different form, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Odin also, you know, he rides a sleigh, you know, pulled by reindeer and whatnot. So I mean, that actually makes a whole terrible amount of sense, you know, like especially coming from Germanic and Scandinavian origins. So,
You gotta play
Which.
God of War Ragnarok right now. So you mentioned Odin, and I'm thinking of that, which is, by the way, our holiday special on Collateral Gaming. So
Nice.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, let me keep that promotion going. So I need you guys to do me a favor. Go subscribe. Click the links in the descriptions below. Subscribe to Collateral Cinema. And in 2 weeks' time on Christmas Eve, we're going to be talking about Kirk Cameron's Surviving Christmas, where a lot of these pagan roots are going to come back up into conversation. But
Oh,
yeah,
definitely.
yeah.
I have some things to say. Oh, I
Yeah,
was yelling at the movie last night. I was yelling.
I've just spoiler alert for that episode. I've done a little bit more homework and come prepared more for that episode than I did for this episode. So, sorry to our normal listeners. But yeah, I think it's I think you're right, Bo, when you talk about, like, I didn't even consider that in terms of like the like Germanic roots and like Scandinavian roots of Santa Claus and like the mythos behind him. So it does make a lot of sense, like in hindsight, for that like transition for like the Santa Claus to be the way it is. And like it also makes his like worn attitude in the beginning of the film kind of like make a lot more sense as well, because like here you have a guy that essentially like went after blood and like quite literally went for the jugular, and then you know now somewhere along the way like is like switched to like being married to the same woman for 1100 years and making, you know, working with elves and reindeer and traveling around and being magic and not understanding Christmas magic. I loved that running joke, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Like they never really explain what the actual magical elements of this really is, you know? It's like it's definitely supernatural in some way,
He
but
doesn't even
he
know it.
doesn't even know it.
Yeah, that
And
was the running gag, is he was like, I don't even understand how it works.
that makes me really want now, like if they make another movie in this franchise, it needs to be a prequel about what happened to for this guy to become Santa Claus, you know? Like
Yeah.
I think an origin story, like a little deeper origin story is in need here.
That could be cool, but I also do like the mystery behind it, you know? It's kind of that there's that gap in where you really don't know.
They don't need to even still explain the Christmas magic even then. They just need to show how he became Santa, you know.
Yeah. No, that would be cool though. It would be
What
dope.
if it's like a situation where it's like if you end up like killing Santa Claus, like you end up becoming Santa Claus and it's just all these years later nobody's tried to go after him or
So
anything.
it
Like
does go back to the
look,
Tim Allen thing,
yeah,
Tim
like that's
Allen,
what I'm
but more
saying.
violent. Tim Allen, but like the Tim Allen mythos, but more.
It's all Vikings.
That would be awesome. That makes Santa Claus metal.
But
Yeah,
I liked the Viking angle personally. I liked the war one angle. Sorry, go ahead.
you would have just called this the Santa Claus, the Viking Age.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Nice. You know, that would actually maybe make that franchise worth something.
If Disney is listening to this, go ahead and make that movie. It's like, come on now.
Yeah, but just don't use Tim Allen,
No.
honestly.
You mean to tell me that the
But
Disney
yeah, no,
Plus
I did.
series? Sorry, you mean to tell me that the Disney Plus series that says "I love you, Satan" is wrong? Oh, wait, they meant to say "I love you, Santa."
Oh no,
Ahead,
that whole
Ash.
thing. Oh
Damn
no.
it. I was just gonna say I did really enjoy the whole Viking angle. I mean, I kind of connect to that. I've got some Viking ancestry,
Nice.
so
Yeah.
somewhere in there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a mutt of the British Isles, so I don't know if I can relate, you know.
But
Yeah, no, can't relate
Like
there.
No.
But David Harbour was honestly, like I said, and the rest of the movie was actually pretty good for me as well. But David Harbour was the best part.
But we haven't brought up the other best part, John Leguizamo.
Okay, yeah, that's
Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge, exactly. He was great as well, man. Like, perfect foil to David Harbour.
Yes.
Perfect foil for the family, even.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm just...
I was gonna say, like, yeah, I love, like, I've been a fan of Leguizamo since I was like a kid. Him and like Paul Giamatti are like two of my like favorite actors of all time. Doesn't matter what they're in, like, I just end up watching their movies. And like, Leguizamo is an actor that over the years has like really proven himself in like other genres, but like, I feel like I haven't seen him take like on like a villainous role in a long time, and he's so like, he's campy and chilling in like the same sense within this, like, the 2 hour runtime.
Yes.
It felt like he almost channeled clown from Spawn.
From right? Spawn, right?
Yeah.
A little bit.
That's the other one of the other villain roles.
A little bit. Yeah. He kind of he channeled that a little bit. That kind of really aggressive, you know, kind of street smarts, kind of.
Okay, so this has got me thinking, because, and I mentioned this to you the other day, right? Hear me out, all right? So everybody's saying if we get a sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie, the new one that's coming out, Danny DeVito needs to be Wario. That goes without saying, right? That doesn't happen, we write. Okay, what if we had John Leguizamo as Waluigi and make it come full circle, because he was Luigi back in the 80s.
That is perfection, man. That is so perfect.
I hate that this is now out there in the podcast sphere, and that multiple people are now fantasizing this, but I also secretly love this.
Oh man, that sounds amazing, man. I mean, we need a solid Wario and Waluigi if we're going to get this franchise going. So.
Nintendo, Illumination, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got my details. But yeah, man, John Leguizamo in that, you know, that villain role, I really think that he comes full force there, especially now, I think, at his age.
Yeah, and definitely playing like the Hans Gruber here, like, just
right.
You know, a lot more like street smart and everything. Like,
yeah, like 100%, and like two, like the fact that they give him like an actual like compelling backstory to like where, like, you know, he like was in a family that was like really like loved the concept of Christmas, and then. Like they couldn't afford it 1 year because like dad got laid off, and then that's kind of like where he like ended up like kind of like hating Christmas, and like that was like his driving force, like just made it such a it made it like an actually like a three-dimensional villain.
Yeah, it actually felt like he had a real personal vendetta against Santa and just against Christmas in general, and that just made him more interesting to watch as we went along, you know, like, and not only that, but also filling that Hans Gruber role.
Yeah. And that vendetta comes to a head at the end. He finally does realize and come and accept, you know, come to terms with the fact that this is the real Santa Claus, undeniable proof. Now it's extremely personal for him. And it's like, I'm here and I'm, what does he say? Christmas dies tonight.
Christmas dies tonight. It's like, oh, is that a subtle little Halloween Kills reference
there?
Is it? Like, really?
I like, there was a part of me that like cringed a little bit in my seat when they said that line. And I was just like, Universal's kind of taking that Warner Brothers approach, where like Warner Brothers put something out there and then like years later, like, they mock themselves. Like, the Green Lantern movie flopped, so years later in Teen Titans Go to the Movies, they're like, there was a Green Lantern movie, we don't talk about it. And like, you're just kind of making those like subtle nods. So like, that line felt just kind of like a subtle nod, so they're like, you know what, Christmas dies tonight, you know. Evil dies. We're taking over another holiday.
What if this actually takes place in the Halloween universe? Like, what if this is in the fucking in the Halloween universe or whatever?
Myers versus Santa Claus.
Michael Myers versus Santa Claus would be amazing.
Yeah, dude, especially like David Harbour's like versus like the James Jade Courtney, like give it to me, please.
Oh yes, that would be so much fun.
Clash of the Holidays,
so much fun.
And I don't know, maybe in the sequel bring the Leprechaun from Leprechaun into it.
There we go.
Warwick Davis.
Get Warwick Davis in here.
Get him back somehow.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Or the guy that did him in Leprechaun Returns. He would be okay too, but preferably.
Yeah, Warwick. That guy was pretty all right.
If you or someone you know is listening to this podcast right now and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. This is the heartbeat of why we do what we do. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and as of this recording, there are 132 suicides that take place each and every day on American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. That resource is going to be right in the description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this. There you'll find resources that include the National Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You can also text HELP to 741-741. We also have a plethora of other resources, including churches, getting connected with counselors, LGBT resources like the Trevor Project, and also Veteran Hotline as well. Please, if you hear nothing else in the show, understand that you, yes, you listening to this right now, have value and worth. We get it. Suicide, depression, mental health, these are hard topics, and the stigma around them doesn't make it any easier. But please consider the resources right in the descriptions below, wherever you guys are listening, because, once again, you have value and you have worth. So please, stay with us.
Yeah. All right. So let's play a little game while we're on the subject of Leguizamo's character. So Leguizamo plays a character in this movie called Mr. Scrooge, where all of his henchmen and like his like little gang that he has acquired all have Christmas based names. If you had to name yourself based on a Christmas theme and or object, what would your name be and why?
I would probably just pick Krampus, but there's already a Krampus in this movie. So, and by the way, he's probably the best henchman out of all of them. He's best henchman. That's by the way.
Oh.
He has the most character. They all have good
characters. Yeah, yeah. It's a colorful cast.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the actual henchmen are kind of funny and interesting in their own rights.
Yeah. So while you're thinking, I will also bring this up. Krampus, the character, is played by Brendan Fletcher, who, if you guys are like me and grew up on Freddy versus Jason, you also know that he died at the hands of Freddy Krueger in that movie.
Yes. Yeah, now I remember him.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes. I love Freddy versus Jason. I think that's going to be our first episode next year. That's going to be our season premiere next year. So
yeah.
We too will be covering that movie next year. Spoiler alert.
Nice. So much fun.
Yeah.
If y'all do a podcasting double feature, then listen to both of our takes, like Victims and Villains and Collateral Cinema. But David Harbour versus Michael Myers. That would be so amazing.
All right, so I think I would have to go, if I had to pick a name, man, Bo, you're going to hate me for this.
Oh, no.
Prime Rib. Because that's honestly the best part of Christmas. When you think about it, it's food. And I'm a big fan of Christmas food, man.
Oh, yes. So,
and the prime rib, I mean, we actually had some prime rib for Thanksgiving because, you know, like, who wants turkey? Nobody really likes turkey. It's dry. Prime rib. That's some good stuff. Why wait for Christmas?
Les sigh.
Bo, I got mine if you want to go for yours.
Christmas movie. I mean, I think it's something better, but I think that kind of fits you.
It fits me. Yeah, I'm gonna go around the world and just spank little kids because they're naughty. And then, right, oh,
so,
yeah, and then there's that tongue of him. Whatever.
So I will keep in the spirit of violence, and I will go Red Rider. And if you guys have seen A Christmas Story, which is so many Christmas like traditions, where to the point where they play it 24 hours, beginning like 8 p.m. on like Christmas Eve on like TBS or TNT. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like for the spirit of this. This movie and the fact that I am the head of our horror department here, like I feel like that just is fitting.
It's very fitting. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, you definitely put an eye out with that thing. So, I mean,
you know, we keep talking about doing A Christmas Story as a Christmas episode at some point, or doing it maybe as a commentary or as a director's cut.
I would like to.
It gets brought up at least once a season because it's like we got to do it covered.
Would like to do a commentary on it, honestly, because there's a lot of interesting stuff to get into that movie. So.
Not to mention that it's not been more relevant than this year with A Christmas Story Christmas, now that they've made this sequel on HBO Max.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Dang.
How did that turn out? Was that any good? Or
I would know. I haven't seen it, so.
Yeah, you're asking the wrong person. Or in this case, I guess, wrong people.
Oh, dang.
So do you guys want some trivia real quick?
Yeah. Yeah. Give it to us.
So this movie was written by the same team that has given us Sonic the Hedgehog in 2020 and Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Both movies we've reviewed.
We've covered, yeah. Interesting. I was not aware of that. I honestly would not have known.
I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about some of the dialogue in the movie, especially between Trudy and David Harbour's Santa, it actually kind of makes a little sense.
It's very campy.
It's got that campy kind of snarkiness that Sonic had.
Yeah.
A little bit. So, yeah.
So I just have to plug this because if you guys are like me and you guys are a cinephile. So this movie is written by Pat Casey and Josh Miller. Josh Miller co-hosts a podcast with Steven Scarlatta, who is the producer of a documentary called Duratsky's Dune. I probably mispronounced that.
I know Yodorovsky's Dune. He did a documentary on that.
Yes. Yeah. So the movie's called Best Movies Never Made. And basically they just go through and like read scripts and like give the history of like movies that are like never made, and they've covered everything from David Lynch's like passion project of something Rocket, his name is escaping me at the time. They've done like never done the Thing sequels to Guillermo del Toro's At the Mountains of Madness. It's a great podcast. If you're like me and you want to hear about projects that never get made, they do a great job, and it's one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. Cheap plug for them. But let's talk about another character in this movie by the name of Morgan Steele, who is played by Cam Gigandet. He's basically this, like, Morgan Steele is a actor that is like making B movies that are, I feel like, would be like the equivalent of like DIY projects being like made like famous on like Tubi. But there's a scene in the movie where he claims he could have stopped the hijackers on 9/11 had he had been aboard the plane.
Wow. Yeah, that's some ego right there.
And this was a real claim that was made by Mark Wahlberg in 2012.
Really? Oh, that, no, I remember that. That's right. He totally did that.
I don't know why, but that actually kind of tracks.
That tracks 100% with him. He's got that Boston, you know, that mass hole thing, as they call him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I see what you mean.
Mark Wahlberg has. Yeah, Mark Wahlberg has since apologized.
I would hope so.
But, yeah, I want to bring up Morgan Steele real quick, because Morgan might actually have two of my favorite scenes in this movie. The scene where he is, so like context real quick, there is the mother in this movie is played by Beverly D'Angelo. Her name's Gertrude. She's kind of like the center of the money that like everyone clings onto, and
yeah, she's the matriarch of the family.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it. And there's a scene where Krampus is like, hey, you know, since you're all gonna die, let's do gifts tonight. And so he's the Morgan Steele's the first one that volunteers. And he pitches her on this idea for a revenge movie to like invest into this like film, because he's popular in not Asia but some parts of Asia, right. To the point where they could not go out and eat because he went everywhere. That scene just absolutely cracked me up. It was probably one of my favorite sequences, and like I feel like the movies that like I remember this actor for are like movies like that and like Easy A, where he like doesn't play the smartest guy in the room, but like he knows how to play stupid like really well.
Yeah,
I could tell that. Like the character he plays in this movie, it kind of it feels like, I mean, somebody like Pierre Kirby a little bit, you know, like who did like just really, really cheesy, lowbrow action movies, like with really outrageous martial arts in it and everything. Uh-huh. Like, or what's the guy that does those? I don't remember his name, but whoops. But yeah, man, that's what he feels like. He feels like he would be in the type of movies that we would do on the director's cut, more or less. Oh, man. Like that's exactly the type of movies that we would do. Like real low budget, just crappy affairs, you know, with yes. Lots of cheesy action.
You know, it's funny. We were laughing our butts off. I think my favorite scene with him is the one where he dies, because it's just the way it happens. You know, what's funny is I was so ready for him to die, but I was so ready for that whole side of the family to just get killed off. I was waiting for it. I don't think I've wanted someone to die so badly since that little turd from Riccio.
From Riccio, yeah, like Bertrude. Bertrude is the white kid equivalent of that.
Yes!
It's just skinnier and white. I mean, that's all that is.
Please tell me you guys stayed for the post-credit scene where he's like, after everything's like all said and done, he like walks over to the body of the commander, like Thorpe, the guy that is like leading like the private army, and he just like goes like, yo, this guy is hashtag dead. And stop.
There's a post-credit scene.
I think we dipped out before then. Yeah.
No, I think the movie ended for us.
The movie ended for us. Yeah.
The copy that we were watching.
Yeah, but no. Yeah. That sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I love the fact that they like introduced him as like Bert, and like you're kind of like, all right, like this is a kid that like we've seen like hundreds of times before. And then like when you get to meet Beverly D'Angelo's character, you're like, Gertrude, is it like even a name? Because like we learned that like Trudy is short for Gertrude. And then like they try and like push back, and they're like, you know what, like you named your son Bertrude, like that's not even a name. And
that was so amazing. I love that so much.
Influence of that matriarch figure. I mean, she's their whole lives are just around her,
which
revolve around her. I mean, even the father, what I forgot his name,
Trudy's father,
Trudy's dad, you know, that kind of ultimately, I mean, we're led to believe that that was what was going wrong with his marriage,
along that line,
is that it was just like it always goes back to the mother, to Gertrude the first,
which, like, all right, so like let's talk about that for a minute, because like, you know, like from a, like a mental health perspective, like for one, I think that's one of the reasons that like I have kind of like kind of had to come to grips with the holidays, is because like, I don't know, I feel like it, to a certain extent, like the holidays bring this like expectation that like you have to kind of like suck back under the, like the mother's teat, and like kind of go through like the matriarchy of like what they're seeing here is like they go from like humans to like almost like looking for like just a drop of like the master's like sweat or like wine or like it just, you know, anything to like be acknowledged by the Beverly D'Angelo character in this movie. And you know, I know we're gonna probably talk about it a lot with, you know, Saving Christmas, but there's a, even if you're like not religious, like I think this principle still applies, but there's a, there's multiple parts in the Bible that talk about how you know, talking about marriage, it talks about how like even a husband will leave his mother and father to be united with his wife. And you know, that act of like cutting off the tie, not necessarily like cutting off the ties, but like creating a life of their own to like, you know, establish a life where they're no longer dependent on mom or dad. And that's the thing that I think is really interesting about the dynamic, the family dynamic at the center of this story, is that you're seeing the mental health of like Alva and like Morgan and Bertrude and Trudy. But then on the flip side, you're also seeing the pain of it with Jason and Linda, who are the, you know, Trudy's mom and dad, about like on the verge of divorce because they're tired of being under the thumb of the D'Angelo character. They no longer want to be tied to this money, but understand that there are more valuable things than, you know, being connected to the teats of this character. And I think to a certain extent, like the movie like references like a lot of times, but like they keep coming back to this phrase of like the golden tits. And I think to an extent, like that's something that, you know, when this idea and this concept of marriage, and, you know, for those of you guys that are been married, like even for those that aren't married, I feel like this rule still applies, is that like the idea of like independence and like being out on your own means that like you are no longer necessarily tied to the finances, but that you are making a way for yourself, and all of the problems that that essentially come with it.
Yeah, it's interesting to me about how the actual, you know, their actual class really plays into how their mental health actually kind of comes to be in many ways. You know, it's really all about this money, you know.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, like it even turns out that, you know, Trudy's dad, you know, he ends up, you know, taking the money, you know. He ends up being the one that you know, even with all that strain on his marriage, he still went and got the money.
Yeah, you know? Maybe not even for greedy reasons, but we've been pushed into a society where it's like money is what we need to feel secure, to, you know, secure our family and to make sure that they're provided for. And, you know, as a father, I get that. It's like, if I had the opportunity to get a bunch of money, I'd be hard pressed not to take it, because, you know, they say money doesn't buy happiness, but man, yeah, it would make a lot of my problems go away.
I mean, seriously, the raging leftist in me just can't help but, you know, see, you know, how the people's social class and their standing and everything.
Well, yeah, no, I was like, screw these rich people the whole time.
It's completely, you know, relevant to how they turned out mentally, You know, I mean,
Right.
just like especially how narcissistic Beverly Gertrude, Beverly D'Angelo's character is, and how that really molds the family dynamic, and how that narcissism can kind of go back to their wealth and, you know, their status in society and whatnot. I mean, that's really I see that as kind of a theme in this movie,
yeah,
more or less. It's just like, you know, how wealth is just problematic.
And
but yeah, that it's kind of, it kind of brings that up to me. So
yeah, and it's a very, I think it's an applicable lesson for the holiday season as well. I mean, especially, you know, in regards to the way that money, you know, and mental health kind of coalesce, because, you know, you get into this mindset of like, you know, hey, I'm struggling with it right now. It's like, I've got to make sure that I just started a new job. I only got one paycheck. And I'm like, man, you know, this next paycheck is for Christmas. I got to make sure my little girl has a good Christmas. And so like money just becomes this object and, you know, almost in a sense takes us away from the spirit of Christmas because we get so hung up over it, even over with noble intentions.
Exactly. And it's interesting in how, you know, these people, you know, these moneyed people, how they actually celebrate Christmas. I mean, it seems kind of perfunctory in a way, you know, like, for instance, going back to Morgan, you know, pitching his movie, you know, it's like it was all meant just to, you know, try to get at her money and everything. So there's a real superficiality to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because it almost feels like, you know, we're like, for, you know, in all of like this like commercialism facade, we're led to believe that like Christmas is the one time of year where you're supposed to like put others above yourself. And in essence, like, you also have this like pushback from society because you're also like, I also have that question of like, what do you want for Christmas? And I hate being asked that question 110% of the time, because like, I'm just like, at the end of the day, like, I don't necessarily care what you get me, because I'm not like materialistic. Like, yes, like, I am a collector of things, as the Patreon people can see behind me, but I, at the end of the day, like, you know, I don't really care about a lot of that kind of stuff, because like, you know, whether you get me a gift that I'm gonna hate or that I'm gonna love, like, I'm still gonna like love and value our relationship together. And, you know, I feel like, you know, the sequence in particular we keep coming back to is the scene where Krampus like prompts them to give the Gertrude the gifts, and like, she's going through, and like, we brought up Morgan's gift, and then we brought up the Alva's gift, which is like this like really sentimental moment of like Gertrude giving birth to Alva, and she just tosses it. She's like, I know, I was there. And yeah, it's this like really funny sequence, but like in hindsight, like, you know, Bo, you brought up like the narcissism of the holidays, and this, you know, there's no other better way to say that. There's like, I feel like, you know, not to be like John Leguizamo and be like Mr. Scrooge, but it's really easy at this time of year to kind of really forget the reason for the season. And like, that reason isn't necessarily like, you know, depending on what you believe, like for like Christians like myself, like we believe it's Christ, but then like for like other people, like, you know, secularists, like, I want to like also say that like the reason of the season, the main reason, is like family. It's a time to come together and, you know, give each other, you know, gifts, whatever you can afford, and kind of like show that you were thinking of that person. But it's also about like breaking bread with people. It's also about like sharing drinks and laughs and memories and creating all of those things that, you know, Hallmark, you know, markets year round and stuff like that. And it's not necessarily about the things that we can give people and kind of like say like, well, this is why I'm better than you because of A, B, or C.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually, you know, I grew up in a Christian household and we didn't really celebrate Christmas holiday, even. It was more of a, it was just about the spirit of giving. And my mom actually grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, believe it or not. So she was super into Christmas and just loved the idea of just that season of giving and seeing our smiles whenever we got that thing that we really wanted. And it's sad that Christmas has become such a transactional holiday, you know. We kind of get away from that, and it and really, you know, I kind of want to go back to what you were saying about gift giving. It's like the best gifts that I've ever gotten are the ones where it's like it wasn't even something I asked for necessarily. It was just like you thought of me. You saw this thing and you thought that this was a perfect gift for me, you know, and I hadn't even thought of that. Those are honestly some of the best gifts that I've ever received, even compared to, you know, the things that I just really wanted, like the Nintendo Wii or my first iPhone. It's like I come back and I think about it. It's like, you know, like my some of the gifts that like my ex-wife used to give me. She was that kind of gift giver. She would just she'll just give you something that made you think, you know, made her think of you. And I think that that's what's special about Christmas.
Absolutely. Yeah,
You know?
I agree with that. I never understand that. No, but I mean, yeah, to me, I mean, those sentiments are, you know, as a non-believer, as an atheist, that's what actually makes me enjoy Christmas holidays. I enjoy this time of year, you know? And I mean, that's why, like, even the stresses that might come with it, it's like I just kind of take them in stride, you know, because in the end, it's all about the people in my life and it's all about, you know, my family and even, you know, these guys in the podcast, you know, Ash and Robert and all of them, you know, it's like they're part of that family as well. So,
Yeah,
you know.
it's about getting together with the people that you love, your family, you know, whether that's by blood or otherwise. And you know, and I love that this movie sort of calls back to that. It really highlights that. That's kind of the running theme throughout, is that, you know, a lot of that special feeling has been lost by today's society, and that affects the mental health of people all across the world.
Hell, even in this movie, it affected Santa's mental health.
Yeah.
You know, so.
How would you guys like to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and other events? Well, now you can. Simply go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains for as little as $1 a month. You guys can help us get mental health resources into current and upcoming generations, educate, and break down stigma surrounding mental health, suicide, and depression. And you get exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And you guys can tell us which Nicolas Cage movie you want us to cover, and we'll do it. All it takes to get started is to go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains or simply click the link in the episode description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode. Pick your tier and get started today. Yes, it's that simple. So quickly select the tier that you want and help us get hope into the hands of the depressed and the suicidal today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, Ash, just because like one of my favorite sequences in this movie is like it's one of the more tender moments, but it's Santa and Trudy are having this conversation via the walkie-talkies, and he's talking. She asked him this question. She's like, you know, if you could see anyone right now, who would you want to see? And he says, well, I would want to see Mrs. Claus. You know, we've been married for 1,100 years, and you know, we still make it work, and I still love her. And just that realization when he like accidentally drops the wedding ring, and you know, he's kind of reminded at that moment of like who like matters most to him. And I think it's such a tender moment because like one of my favorite things is like it's one of the things that like I don't want to say I necessarily hate about being married, but like I love, you know, now that we're farther away from family where we currently live, I guess I will say it that way. I love the feeling of like waking up to my wife next to my wife on Christmas morning and just kind of like getting to spend the day with her. and like embracing the traditions that we've created throughout the years. And like I really felt Santa in that moment, to where like marriage isn't necessarily the easiest thing in the world, but when two people truly love each other and, you know, they're willing to do whatever it takes, they are literally doing, they're literally willing to do whatever it takes. And that's the kind of marriages that I feel like are built to last, like what we see with Santa Claus and his version of Mrs. Claus. It does bum me out that we never did get to see Mrs. Claus in this version. But you know, at the end of even the end where like the reindeer come back and she gives him like the little note and says something along the lines of like, you know, hey, like thought you would need this. Like it's this like tender moment that like proves that like if you actively keep a spark alive and in marriage, that like marriages are also like willing to survive like the darkest hurricanes and like biggest storms. I think that like the holidays sometimes can like really be tempt that and can really test those waters. And I think you see that with Jason and Linda's relationship in this movie, to where it's like it takes them going through something traumatic like the events of this hostage negotiation, this heist, to kind of rediscover their love.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. I mean, I can't 100% relate because I've never been married. I mean, Ash has been married himself, so
yeah,
you know.
And there are definitely a lot of things that I would do differently now in retrospect with the way that I had, you know, that went. But I understand, you know, that core value, and I experience it still. I think with my kid, it's someone that I would do absolutely anything for, you know. But it seems to me that you're the expert, Mark.
Oh no,
I'm sorry, I had to throw in the room quote.
Oh yeah, you got to. that's what you get with us here at Collateral Cinema.
Look I just happened to like see a random like scene from the room before we started recording of them where Johnny and Greg's character are at the diner, and they're like just having conversation about, he's like, why don't you tell me who the client is? And he's like, yeah, so anyways, how's your sex life? And I was like, what a great transition there.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, how's your sex life?
Yeah, that's how it feels sometimes, like talking about like heavier things here with like mental health. It's always like, yeah, so anyways, like this movie, what'd you think of it? You know, and one of the things that I will say, we've talked about it already, is some of the heart that this movie has. And I feel like this movie in and of itself is trying to be this, like, it's a Christmas movie at its core. Like it's overtly like telling you, hey, this is a Christmas movie. And one of the things that I think this movie does really well is, obviously before I talked about this, but like John Leguizamo's crew is like named after like Christmas things. Like there's gingerbread and candy cane and sugar plum and just like every other thing you think of. Some of the kills that happen earlier in this movie are all done via like Christmas decorations and like they're Christmas themed. But I think at this, like the core of this movie, like it is obviously a Christmas movie. It doesn't stop. It stops multiple times to tell you that. But with that, it reverts to that heart that a lot of Christmas movies have, to where it's like, man, like, yeah, like I understand this is a 100% a Christmas movie. So it has a lot of the heart and the humor that a lot of other Christmas movies have. And that's something I really, really love and respect about this, is like that, like this is a movie, for as fun as it is, like it still has a heart at its core.
But then there's guys getting chucked into wood chippers at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what makes it such a blast.
And decapitations.
Yeah,
and
it's fine.
Yeah, and really, really cool practical effects on a lot of it as well.
I mean, the juxtaposition of these things is, I think, best seen in the scene where he finally meets Trudy. They have a heartwarming moment. They hug each other because they've been talking on the walkie-talkie up to this point. But the henchwoman is not finished off yet. So he's like, you know, turn around, close your eyes, plug your ears, sing really loudly. And then
sing Jingle Bells.
Bashes.
Yeah,
that girl's head in. So right after he just had this heartwarming like hug with this girl, and it's like still kind of in the spirit of that, like, you know.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it doesn't even skip a beat with the schmaltz, you know.
Right.
I mean, like 100%.
Yeah. I thought that was actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do love kind of like the creativity that comes with like the knocking off of the bad guys one by one. I think probably one of my favorite sequences is the scenes where he gets caught by Leguizamo's Mr. Scrooge, and like he's like interrogated, and like so he's like starting to like go down and like talk, like kind of just like air everyone's dirty laundry, and he's like, how did you know I wanted a Huffy in 1982? He's like, every kid wants a bike. Like, he's not the real Santa Claus.
Yeah.
That's so hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like all the other henchmen are actually starting to like kind of be suspicious. So they're quick to be like, he might be the real one, but Mr. Scrooge has a personal vendetta. It's hard for him to accept.
Very much so.
You know, despite overwhelming evidence actually in front of his eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it takes him a minute to actually come to that realization. And that realization comes when he finally sees the nice and naughty list, you know, which is done in a cool way in this movie. It's just like a very abstract, you know, kind of supernatural list and everything.
Yeah.
And it lists all of their deeds, you know, good and bad.
Yeah,
so.
I like how Santa just has this like magical ability, you know, like as Santa does, to remember every single kid that he's ever, you know, given a gift to, and is able to instantly recognize them even.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if maybe that's kind of tied into the Christmas magic as well.
Well, it obviously is.
It has
I think
to be.
That's part of it, you know, and it's like one of those things that he probably would say is like, I don't know how it works, but I look at someone's face and I know who they are, and well, I remember everything that's ever happened with them.
It's like some weird reverse of the Shinigami eyes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I think that moment's like really, you know, something like awesome. I love the way that you get kind of got to see the good, the bad in this one, the naughty nice list in this one. But I think too, like you kind of bring up like John Leguizamo's character is, I think we've kind of hinted at this already, but like his entire character and like his entire drive of like what gives his character motivation and like makes him a villain this movie is like the trauma that comes with the holidays. And like, you know, the divorce that happens between kids finding out that Santa Claus isn't necessarily real, and the fact that like your Christmas is like based on like what your parents can actually afford that year versus like, you know, what everyone else is getting. Because like growing up, like I wouldn't necessarily say that like I grew up poor, but like we grew up definitely like middle class. And so like, wow, like the gaming boom was like really starting to happen, and like all my friends were like getting like Xbox Ones and like PS3s. Like I was getting like maybe like a cheap guitar, like, you know, like gifts, like clothes and stuff like that. So like, you know, like I don't hold that against my parents by any means necessary, because like as an adult, like I definitely understand that now more as like as an adult. But you know, I think that's something that you don't really grasp with as a kid. And like I think there's a lesson there to be learned about like the bitterness that comes with the holidays as well.
Yeah. And there is kind of that question that every child that believes in Santa asks, and it's like, you know, why does Santa willing to bring gifts to my rich neighbor, but not me. You know, it's kind of one of those questions that's difficult to answer. Now, I actually, my parents never did the Santa thing with me. So I kind of grew up with that understanding that, you know, Christmas was based on my parents' financial constraints. But, you know, it's something that I think hits home for a lot of kids. And it's something that I'm glad was addressed in the movie, was that, you know, yeah. He kind of just does his best, you know, he tries to get all the kids that really need it. But at the end of the day, he's just a human that has a lot of magical power and, you know, I guess can live forever. But other than that, you know, is subjected to human constraints.
Definitely. Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder, like, I mean, what he really goes through every Christmas Eve, you know, where, yeah. I mean, he's having to stop at a bar to take a
right.
What crap are they does he deal with right, on a right. yearly basis, you know?
And then he shows up at the rich people's house and he's like, you know what? they got an old bar here, man. Like, I'm just nice brandy and
not a nice brandy, like, I mean, 100-year-old brandy or something like that, like very, very rare vintage. And it's I would do that as well. I'm just like, well, all right.
But at the end of the day, he's still doing it.
Yeah.
And he's only questioning himself why he's still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very adult thing right there. That's something we can all relate to. You know, it's like maybe we've all kind of come to that point.
Right.
At one point in our lives.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, like, I've come to that point where I'm like, you know, like not understanding why you do things as like a certain adult, like, Ash, like, if you don't mind my asking, man, like, because I you're the only parent on this call, like, how have you, like, handled Santa Claus with, like, with your kid?
Well, like I said, I didn't grow up with Santa, so if it were up to me entirely, I just wouldn't do it. Honestly, I felt like I grew up a more rational child, and I was more rational than I think some of my peers at the time, and I was able to understand where my gifts came from. It avoided a lot of issues. But that being said, her mom wants to do Santa, so I don't want to step on any toes. So, you know, I just kind of approach it to where, like, you know, these are the gifts that I give you. And, you know, these are the gifts that we know that are from your mom, from, you know, and I kind of just, I think I asked her about it the other day. I was like, you know, hey, is Santa Claus a real person? Actually, and she's 3, you know, but, like, I'm trying to figure out if she thinks of Santa as, like, you know, is it like your cartoon or is it like something you actually believe in?
Yeah,
you know, so that's kind of how I'm approaching it, is like, I don't want to tell her something that's not actually true, and I don't want to step on any parents' toes, but I just it doesn't, I don't know, as a more logical, rational person, it's weird to me.
No, that's absolutely fair. So, like, one of the things that, like, I've done in research for your podcast, like, portion of this crossover is, like, I watched a separate documentary that kind of took a more, like, expanded approach to the themes that are talked about in Surviving Christmas. And, like, one of the things is, like, you know, they were interviewing parents, and parents were like, we're very open with our kids about Santa Claus. And so, like, you know, when they were kind of, like, old enough to, like, make decisions for themselves, we're like, do you want to make believe pretend? You know, we're, like, very open and honest about them that, like, Santa isn't real, but, like, we're allowing them to also have the decision to be like, hey, you can decide whether or not you want to, like, play Santa make believe with the other kids. And it's kind of given them the best of both worlds. I've never heard it quite put like that, and I just kind of thought that was, like, something that was, like, really genius, because, you know, one of the things that I think, and again, to come back to the subject of trauma, you get to see that with Leguizamo's character of Santa Claus being, quote, not a quote unquote not real,
right.
You know, because you're essentially laying on to those kids, like, years of trauma that is having to be processed from the fact that they spent, you know, the first, what, half of their life believing this thing that you told them was real wasn't
literally
real.
Exists.
Yeah.
You even see it, and to some extent, parents really. I had a stepmom that was this way, actually, that was like, if you don't believe in Santa, you don't get gifts. And it's like, at this point, your kids are old enough that they know Santa doesn't exist. So you're making them pretend for why? Like, you know that they don't know. What are you getting out of this? I like Santa as a character, as a concept, as a, you know, it's like I said, if Hazel come, my kid, if she comes to understand that, like, hey, here's this idea, this like fictional character, just like a cartoon you watch, you know, I can get into that. I like that. I think that's a cool concept. The level to which we take that with our kids, you know, again, you know, it's not really my place to say your relationship and what you want to do with your kid. Sure. If you want to have that special moment, go for it. But like I said, I kind of appreciated my childhood the way it was. And, you know, and we were even told, you know, don't ruin it for other kids. My mom was very adamant that, like, you know, hey, you know, you don't believe in this, but don't go ruin it for somebody else.
Yeah. Basically don't screw up other people's good time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, Santa is a part of that good time when it comes to Christmas. So,
but Santa as a character, I think, is a wonderful idea. I like the way that even came full force in this movie. And we kind of, you know, he's an embodiment of goodwill, of the want to do something better for the people that you love. You want to give, you know, of yourself. And share something and put someone else's wants or needs above your own. And that's a very important thing, I think, that we do need to teach children.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you guys 100%. And like, I'm not coming at this from like a perspective of like a parent, but like, yeah, I think that like being open and honest with your kids about things like has, you know, like I come from like another like experience where like my parents had like one of my parents had a really had a big secret that they kept from like my sister and I for a while, and like I don't want to say like it necessarily like damaged like our relationship, but it definitely like changed the course of the relationship from like what it was. And like I feel like that something like Santa or like the Easter Bunny or like anything like that definitely has the ability to do something basically the same exact thing. It has the ability to do the same force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it can. I mean, wasn't that what the Polar Express was about?
Kind of, sort of.
That cursed movie.
Oh, Lord. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, I think, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think as a concept, there's definitely a magic to Christmas, but yeah, I think openness and honesty is honestly the best way to avoid those kinds of traumatic situations later in life, because it's like, hey, you lied to me about this. What else have you not told me? You know?
Yeah, you would think it would undermine basic trust between parent and child.
And every kid takes it different. Some kids just kind of naturally figure it out on their own, and maybe that's because their parents weren't that serious about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a hard moment, and I think, you know, it turns out villains like John Leguizamo's character, Mr. Scrooge.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never know who's going to be the next Mr. Scrooge. So, you know, be open and honest with your kids. And of course, I say that jokingly as a single guy with no kids. So parent how you will. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for us on this episode of Victims and Villains and the first half of the Collateral Christmas crossover. Where can people find you guys online?
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter And you can also find us on YouTube if you don't have any of the other podcast apps. But I mean, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, just wherever you get your podcast. And if there is any app or platform that we're not on, I mean, by all means, let us know and we'll try to get ourselves on that, you know?
Yeah.
And also you can find us on Chill Lover Radio and on Good Pods as well.
Yeah. And we also have a Patreon where we release exclusive full-length movie commentaries. Probably gonna do something holiday related.
Yeah, and we are going to start getting into live streaming here very soon to kind of reach out to our listeners and everything, kind of, you know, maybe talk about some of the movies that we've discussed on the show, like while we're playing some video games or whatever. So
yeah, we kind of wanted to do a live stream thing maybe starting this holiday, because you know, like we've done the live stream with Victims and Villains a few times, and it seems like it would be it's a good game for us to get into.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, really.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about doing, was it either a director's cut commentary or a Patreon comment? I think it was a Patreon commentary on Black Christmas, right?
Yeah,
the 2006 one.
Yeah, the 2006 Black Christmas. Ooh. Like, this is a fun little exploitation movie. I mean, if you just don't take it at face value, but yeah, it would.
Now, we did have some connection issues here, so you guys click the links in the descriptions below and follow Collateral Cinema wherever you guys get your podcast from. They're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And most importantly, you guys can also follow us on those platforms as well. But even more importantly than that, you guys can also click the links in the descriptions below. Check out our mental health resource library if you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression. Thank you guys, and happy holidays. What are you doing?
Why can't you let me be? Ooh.